Welcome back to the Puckin' Pod. On today's episode, we discuss the Four Nations Tournament. We also discuss post-tournament expectations of our teams. We also pay tribute to some recent celebrity passings. That's all coming up next, right here on the Puckin' Pod. Let's puckin' go! Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Puckin' Pod. My name is Joe.
I'm Brandon.
And I'm Paul.
Well, gentlemen, we got a lot to talk about. But before we talk about anything, I just have to say one thing. I don't know if you remember, a couple of weeks back, I had pneumonia. And I was coughing a lot, you know, while we were trying to record. And it was only about maybe 2 weeks ago where I finally got rid of that cough. Well, I got sick again on the freaking weekend. My daughter passed on another GD cold to me, and my immune system is like, yeah, we're not done yet. So here I am suffering through it. So if you hear sniffles, that would be your man, Joe, sniffling in the corner.
Like an aftershock.
I know. It's ridiculous. I don't know what it is, and maybe it's just me, but like I feel like sometimes, you know, you feel like relieved that you can breathe again and, you know, you're done with all the coughing and it was relentless. Like having pneumonia is really difficult because you're coughing for a couple of weeks. But for me, ultimately, it was a relief to be, you know, healthy for about a week. And then to catch this cold all over again, I was just like, you're shaking your fist at the clouds. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of like it's a funny and yet sad kind of thing is that, you know, they call kids like little petri dishes because they're always carrying bugs and stuff like that. Yet they're supposed to have the heightened immune system. And so they get over it in a few days and we're coughing our guts out for the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I'm actually pretty thankful that my immune system is pretty decent because when I do get sick because of my sleep apnea, it actually takes me 2 or 3 times longer than most people to recover if it's like to do with my lungs,
and you have asthma too.
I have
you?
Asthma as well. Yeah. And I'm overweight. So woo, let's go.
The trifecta.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's funny, and ultimately, like you know, I feel bad because my daughter, unfortunately, she actually has strep throat, so she's sitting at home, kind of. She hasn't gone to school at all this week, and it's been tough on her because she's, you know, she wants to have the same energy she normally has, and she'll get little spurts of energy, but then she just crashes. You know, she sleeps most of the day and stuff like that. So I feel bad for her. I hope she gets, you know, I hope she feels better eventually, and she can get through it, you know, pretty decently, hopefully soon. You know, it just sucks how it affects you too in the end. I had to take a day off work this week just to sort of make sure I got the rest I needed and whatnot. But you know, the most difficult part of this whole thing is not being able to breathe. I had the worst sleep last night because I woke up in the middle of the night not being able to breathe. Had to take, you know, some sinus pills and whatnot to try and clear it up and be able to go back to sleep again. So, and I'm a terrible sleeper as is. So, you know, those issues, when they stick around, it's like, it makes your life a living hell for most of the part, but I'm doing okay in the long run. You know, I like to complain a lot about my own issues, but you know, gentlemen, it's been a couple of weeks since the Four Nations tournament was here. I will probably be the first to admit it was a lot more exciting than I thought it would be. And, you know, I feel like we should probably talk about it and just sort of give our thoughts on, how the tournament went.
Yeah, obviously, the outcome that all of us, I know, were expecting and hoping for, it was in question the first game against the finals. I won't get the team just yet because we're talking about the tournament right now. But there was concern, obviously, with that first game. And then, Canada really showed that they are still strong.
I didn't think that Canada was going to win that tournament. I did not have them as my pick. I thought the Americans the whole way.
I thought they were going to destroy. I thought the Americans were going to take it, and not only just take it, but like
commandingly,
embarrassingly. Yeah. And you know, it actually reminded me a lot of the 2010 Olympics in Vancouver. And I don't know if you guys remember, but when I was, you know, I was living in Vancouver during that time, and I remember when the United States beat Canada in the round robin that year. It was like, you know, there was some doubt with us Canadians, right? We were like, man, can we really lose, you know, the gold medal? Can we even get a medal on home soil? And then the way it kind of turned out, it was incredible. This time around, you know, with the Four Nations, it was interesting because, you know, we were all looking at it like, is this really a tournament for best on best when you consider all the injuries that were out there and you consider, you know, the fact that it was only four teams. There were certain teams that weren't involved that probably should have been involved. You know, it was still an exciting tournament in the end.
Well, even like some of the roster selection, like, right, you wouldn't have expected some players to be cut out from the teams that were there, like some of the American players. I certainly thought some of the Canadian players, I was quite surprised with the choices. Even Canada's starting goaltender, to be honest, through the tournament, was not expected.
We all doubted Binnington. Yeah. We all did.
I have that as a couple of talking points later as well to discuss that in a little bit more detail, just because I think we all kind of agree that we were like, why is he even playing? Yeah. And there was a couple of times during the tournament that you're a little like, ooh,
like a couple of soft goals, maybe.
Yeah, you know, that sort of thing. But they, you know, and the Americans and the Canadians both were battling a couple of pretty key injuries.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, you can kind of be devil's advocate, I guess, and say, you know, you wonder what could have happened either way. Other than that, you know, Makar missed the first game against the Americans, right? Yeah. So, you know, just and he's such a difference maker in the game as it is. And the same with Matthew Tkachuk on the American side, as one example, right? You know, what a difference maker that guy can be, you know, on the ice, but like off the ice. What I mean by that is the bench. Like,
yeah.
Because he runs his mouth. But.
But I mean, you know, when you consider that too, like, it just goes to show that you didn't need the best goaltender to play for Canada when you consider the depth that they had on defense and that they had on forwards as well defensively, but also offensively in the end. It was kind of a it wasn't necessarily a shooting gallery, but like there was definitely some skilled players on both sides, you know, and in terms of the finals. But you know, it was an exciting tournament for the players that were there, and they did bring their all, which is kind of you kind of think when you're going into it, you're kind of thinking, is this just going to be a glorified, you know, all-star game really? But it ended up being more than that. I think really they wanted to win.
Yeah, like I think it was definitely a show of not just the talent of the players, but even the coaching and in terms of how, you know, the games progressed and certainly the matchups that were happening. Again, we talk about Binnington. Outside of even the coaching side of it, none of us probably see him that often, obviously, because he's the St. Louis Blues, you know, starting goaltender. We really only ever watch those games when they're playing our teams.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, I think myself and a lot of people underestimated Jordan Binnington throughout the tournament in terms of his capabilities. He did let some questionable goals in some of the games that he played, but he, John Cooper believed in him for being able to step up in the key moments. Obviously, he did that in the St. Louis run to the Stanley Cup, and he proved it again in this tournament.
I mean, really, I think the whole country kind of thought that Binnington wasn't the guy.
Yeah.
And to be honest, it's not only is it awesome to get that win, and, you know, I think Canada was showing that this tournament meant a little bit more than just hockey, right?
I know. I
think we can all agree that. And, I mean, we can get into that a little bit more, too. But just to finish on Binnington, the fact that the entire country, I think, for the most part as fans, except for maybe, you know, if where he's from, thought that, you know, he probably wasn't the best choice as a starting goaltender, but maybe that experience was going to pay off for him, and it did, right, in the end of the tournament. So
yeah.
Well, it is surprising that they locked in the rosters as far ahead of the tournament as they did, because you'd have to wonder whether they were, you know, looking throughout the season, oh, maybe this wasn't the right decision, maybe we should have swapped him out. But you know, they had to lock in the rosters, and if I was originally looking at the team, I would have, looking at how Washington Capitals have been this year, I would have put Logan Thompson on that team ahead of both probably both Binnington and Aiden Hill. Montembeau, I knew was going to be the third stringer, so I figured he's probably the easiest to swap out. But the way Logan Thompson's played this year, I would have expected him to be the
Me too. I was starter. Thinking the same thing for sure. Yeah, going back.
So I didn't realize until they were talking about it during the tournament that was literally the first international competition since 2016.
Wow.
Because that was
best on best.
Best on best.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So And I also didn't realize that necessarily it was going to replace the All-Star, like the whole All-Star experience for this season. Because I'm actually one of the rare people that like both. I like the All-Star and the skills competition.
Yeah.
I'm probably one of the rare ones. I watch it
I enjoy 3-on-3 hockey, to be honest. Like, I'm a big fan of 3-on-3 hockey. It would be nice if they actually had 3-on-3 that was a bit more meaningful, like, than the All-Star game.
Yeah.
Which is funny when you say that, because they are playing for $1 million. You know, they're playing for something in the All-Star game. But I think that, you know, international hockey is a little bit more exciting because it does mean more, you know, in the end. They are playing for a championship trophy.
It'd be nice if they kind of adapted or adopted the MLB way of doing the All-Star game, where whichever side wins the American League or the National League, they get the home advantage in the World Series. That'd be cool to do with the 3-on-3 tournament. You know, you do probably the, you know, the Atlantic and the Central. Whoever wins that All-Star game, they'll get the home ice advantage. If that team doesn't make the finals, it'd still be the conference that gets the home ice advantage.
I do like that. I think that's kind of neat. Yeah, give it a little bit more incentive, right?
Exactly.
The only argument I would have towards that is the fact that hockey is such a higher level of emotion involved in the game. Because, I mean, really, you got to bring intensity to win, right? And it's like, you're not going to do that in an All-Star game. None of these guys want to do that. They don't want to be hurt. They want to be in Tahiti.
Yeah.
Right? Whereas in the MLB,
I don't know why. The only reason why we're laughing is because of the way you said Tahiti.
Tahiti.
Just a little high-pitched tone at the end.
But in the All-Star game for the MLB, I mean, Scherzer's not going to plunk a guy.
Yeah.
Right? It's not going to happen. The emotions aren't going to get there. In baseball, you see it so much less. In hockey, you see scrums 10, 15 times a night. You know, that emotion runs high. Baseball, it's just as much as they play hard with what's given to them, there isn't that physical, emotional side of the game that they have to actually battle for.
Well, and it's the type of game, right? Obviously, hockey is a more physical game than baseball is, so you're less likely to you know, see aggression like that when you got a bunch of guys standing around a field waiting for the ball to come their way. So
that would be my only argument to having it mean so much. As, you know, like home ice advantage in the final.
Well, I think specifically, just going further with that topic too, this specific tournament did mean a lot more, especially to Canadians because of everything that's going on politically, right? When we think about, you know, everything that, and we've talked about in past podcasts about how, you know, Canadian fans are booing the American national anthem. Obviously, this is in retaliation to what's going on with, you know, Donald Trump and the American, you know, politics, quote unquote. I'm not going to call it politics because it's not really politics. But, you know, as we've gotten further and further into the tenure of his second run as president, we as Canadians are feeling more and more like we have to defend ourselves. And so playing a tournament like this, especially against the United States, it just meant that much more for us to win it.
People are actually starting to like Alberta again. It's crazy.
Did you hear? No, I'm not going to get into it. I'm not going to get into it. This is not a political show. We're not going to get into it. But, you know, I did. Did you hear about this guy going down to the States to try and convince them to make Alberta the 51st state?
I did.
Did you hear about this? No. Yeah, there's a guy canvassing. I don't know what his name is. I haven't done all the research. I just know that it's happened. There's a guy who's gone down to meet with the president. Well, I don't know if he met with the president, but he's met with somebody, and he's trying to canvass them to take Alberta as the 51st
annex
state.
Alberta.
Yeah. You know, he's got the support of maybe 200 people. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. These are people who, again, this is not a political show. We're not going to get into it, but I just think that it's kind of, you know, you're not exactly going to get a warm welcome when you come back home. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, like, I'm sure there's people that can look at the possible benefits to, say, if, you know, if Canada was annexed into the States in terms of having one level currency, having the additional financial support and that kind of stuff. There is, I'm sure, the benefits side to that, but it's, you know, to put your sovereignty in question and, you know, what we stand for as Canadians, because we're some of the most loved people in the world, and it's because of the type of people we are, what we stand for as a country, you know, freedom and love and devotion and you know, helping our fellow man. It's not something the United States is known for. So
I will say this too, like, this, everything that's been going down, if anything, it's brought Canadians together. Whether you support one side of politics or the other, we've all seemed to come together and be, and we're standing for the same thing, which is like, this is our country and we're not going to let you take it away from us, you know, just so that you can have more power somewhere else. You know what I mean? Like, I'm sure there's more to it, but it's really cool to see. It gives me goosebumps just thinking about it, you know, the fact that Canadians are standing together and we're all very proud Canadians.
I did see it, a post earlier on X. Someone was somebody I follow back east in Toronto, and they were talking about how they were in a grocery store today, and one of the clerks he heard overheard helping a lady find stuff, a certain brand that was Canadian.
Yeah.
And then he said he moved on to the next aisle, and he saw a lady and her son, and she was on the phone asking him, well, what about this one? Wait a sec, let me Google it. No, not Canadian. Like, so, like it seems to be kind of trickling down. People are at least conscious of it, and they're thinking about things like that.
I love that. I think that's great because it is, it's beneficial to, you know, the Canadian businesses that are out there to sell their products and get more recognition for their products. Because, you know, there's a lot of great Canadian products that people don't know about because they're so used to the commercials that you see on American TV and stuff, right? So you're just going to go and buy that product because that's the, you know, that's what you're familiar with. But there's a lot of great Canadian products out there that people don't know about.
Well, I think, you know, if people are expecting Canada to ever be like a financial powerhouse, it's unfortunately, it's just never going to happen when we've got a tenth of the size of the population of the United States, obviously, because most of our country is quite frigid with the weather that we have. But we still have a lot of resources, a lot of stuff that's useful and available to us. And, you know, it's important for both countries to work together in the long run if we're able
to. I mean ultimately that's how it's always been, you know. This is the first time in our history as neighbors that we've ever had a trade war like this, and it seems completely useless and redundant.
Well, we don't really want to be fighting off the ice, but they certainly were on the ice.
That's
that
right.
First game between Canada and the U.S. What did you guys think of that?
Oh my gosh. Yeah, especially that first game. It was like within the first
9 seconds.
How many?
First 9 seconds.
Two fights in 9 seconds.
Three fights in nine
seconds. Oh, was it really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
The first two fights were in the first 3 seconds.
Oh. I have a theory behind that. I think that what happened was, again, talking about what the big, again, I'd bring it back to the politics that are happening, but I mean, ultimately, that was the reason why we're booing the national anthem and whatnot, right? My theory is that I think they got together, the players got together on both sides before the game and said, we should probably do something, you know, to sort of deal with this political issue. Let's fight for the first nine, you know, for the right at the opening face-off. I think maybe that's because, I mean, you know, I see that a lot when it comes to like momentum in hockey. Like, obviously that's the whole purpose of fighting in hockey is for momentum. But I also think that it's sort of a way to squash issues, you know? And you see that when it comes to like people getting hit in hockey and things like that, where the next game they play each other, there's a big fight or whatever to sort of make up for it, right? Do you think at all there's any validity to that?
I don't think so. I think the Americans did. And I think there's been a little bit of scrutiny within the media, a little bit about that.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been shots fired after the fact as well. Just how, you know, like the Tkachuk brothers are on a world tour right now. Like,
I know, it's crazy.
They might be the opening
as
act for Taylor Swift or something.
Thing.
Like, I'm not really sure. But, you know, like, I think Matthew Tkachuk was on Jimmy Fallon last week or something. And I think there was one point where Brady said something along the lines of, yeah, we had a group chat in the morning and we were talking about it and we thought we were going to try to make something happen. And then Hagel was like, I don't play, like, we don't have group chats. I don't play for the cameras. I play from the crest, right?
Yeah.
And so, I mean, he could be lying, but who knows, right? You'd like to believe him as a Canadian fan, although he's kind of still, now he's back to being a little bit of a rat. So
he can
stay down in Tampa for all I care. But, I mean, he was a bit of a warrior during the tournament, right? But just that intensity, not even in that game, but right from the very beginning when they were playing Sweden, too. Like, it was a pretty intense game.
Yeah.
And it's the same when the Americans played Finland. That was a rough game.
Yeah.
Right? And there was, I didn't necessarily expect that to happen just because, usually, you know, replacing the All-Star weekend, guys kind of like to chill out a little bit. But it was so hyped. The tournament had been so hyped. And I think the NHL was actually worried about it leading up to.
Yeah, I think you're right.
They were increasing their commercials and whatnot and the marketing for it. And then it ended up being, like, really awesome, I thought, overall.
I did too, actually. we went into that tournament, I personally believed I wouldn't watch it because I felt like it doesn't mean anything. What's the big deal? But the hockey was so good that you had no choice. And well, I mean, I was watching for the players on the Canucks too, right? Like I was watching Sweden and I was watching, you know, I was watching Lankinen on the Finland team you know, obviously watching Canada just because it's Canada. Rick Tocchet was one of the coaches on Team Canada too, so that was pretty exciting. Yeah, it was exciting to watch.
Yeah, like when I think starting off with Canada to start out the tournament, just because again, you know, it's known to be our sport because obviously it was created here. You know, they had a large viewership even for that first game, which set the tone for the tournament in my opinion, and. It was an intense tournament. Like, you know, the hitting was there, the rough stuff with the tournament was there. Even the like as I was talking about earlier with the coaching, you could see the matchups happening all the way throughout the game, just like you would see in a regular hockey game. But when you're doing best on best, that intensity and that pressure to win is that there that much more, and so it's that much more exciting to watch. Like certainly when I was watching Canada and Sweden too, I was you know, gritting my teeth on some of the goals that Binnington let in, but at the same time, I was, you know, jumping out of my seat when Canada scored and, you know, looking at the overtime too, right? The way that turned out.
So obviously with me being a Canuck fan, and I'm not an Oiler fan by any means, anytime McDavid scored a goal, other than the final, of course, but anytime McDavid scored a goal, I never celebrated. And it's funny because my son always pointed it out to me. He's like, "Daddy, you're not celebrating." I'm like, "Well, no, because McDavid scored. I cannot cheer for McDavid."
I don't think there was many.
Yeah, and no, I think there was like one or two, but yeah. But in the end, like even when he did score in a non-meaningful, quote unquote, non-meaningful game, like I just didn't find myself excited about it. If it was Crosby, if it was MacKinnon, of course I'm cheering because I, you know, obviously I respect those players, but. And I don't disrespect McDavid. I just can't cheer for him because he's an Oiler. You know what I mean? Like, it's hard for me. But in the end, you know, when it really mattered, of course I cheered. I was so excited when that final goal went in.
Yeah. Yeah. It was great to see Crosby and MacKinnon be able to play together kind of on an international style tournament. There's still the possibility they might play next year in the Olympics together, but, you know, you never know. Crosby could have a career-ending injury, and that might be the only time that they get to play international hockey together.
We could see Bedard play for Team Canada in the Olympics, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So there's four guys on that team from BC.
Mm-hmm.
Can you guys name who they are? I'll give you a hint. There's a forward, two defensemen, and a goalie.
Devon Taves.
He's from Abbotsford.
A goalie.
Was it Aiden Hill?
Yeah. He's from Comox.
Oh, you know what? I think I knew that. Yeah. He's an island guy. Yeah. Wait, you said a goalie, two defensemen?
Two defensemen and a forward. You need a defenseman and a forward.
Hmm.
One of them is a pretty big hockey family.
That's a tough one.
He plays in the East. From Vancouver, but he plays in the East. He's from North Vancouver specifically.
Did Morgan Rielly play on Team Canada?
No.
Yeah, I would have said Morgan Rielly did.
It's Sam Reinhardt.
Oh, Reinhardt. That's yes, right. Yes, yeah. Of course.
And then from Aldergrove, Shea Theodore.
Shea Theodore. What? He played?
Yeah. Well, he got hurt in the first game.
I was going to say. Yeah, that's right.
Poor guy. So it was kind of a trick question.
What I was thinking was, he played? I thought he was hurt because he got hurt at the tournament.
Yeah.
Right.
Which, if you bring that up, right, like we're talking about the injuries that happened during the tournament, because this wasn't really a, you know, meaningful tournament in regards to the actual NHL season. It was meaningful to the countries. You know, what are the, I guess, the ownership and the teams thinking now that they have these players like Shea Theodore, who's out for weeks right now because he broke his wrist at a tournament like this.
Matthew Tkachuk's on LTIR.
Yeah.
I mean, that's going to probably permit Florida to do something pretty big at the trade deadline. That's what, is it, he's 9.5 or something on their cap? It might even be a little bit more than that.
Both Tkachuk brothers literally gave it their all for this tournament, you know, and I'm sure they all did, but like they were physical, you know, and so... There are repercussions to being that physical and that aggressive. And unfortunately for Florida fans, that's what they're seeing right now. Now, I'm predicting he's going to be all better by the first game of the playoffs, but we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. And yeah, I mean, you know, for those of you listening, they may not realize, but today is actually the day before trade deadline day. You know, there's been a lot of trades and stuff that we've seen. We're not going to talk about it on this episode because we're doing a live stream tomorrow on YouTube. So it's pretty exciting. And if you did watch our live stream, you know, give us a comment and let us know, because I want to hear about who's checking us out on YouTube. I think it'll be a lot of fun tomorrow. I'm hoping technically, my fingers are crossed, I'm hoping technically everything works great, but we'll just go with what we got. And, you know, I know at least one camera angle will work.
Now, in terms of the round robin standings, did that kind of turn out in terms of the placings of the teams that you were expecting?
I think so. I would say that it's a little strange because they give it's a different point system.
Yeah.
Right. You get 3 points for a win, and we've got four columns that you can have a win in overtime, a loss in overtime. Like they count it differently for every single thing. So I think that's. I still think there could have been more games. I think, you know, that round robin was three, and then that's kind of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I would have liked to have seen a little bit more with just how I think the tournament ended up being, and how the hype it was for the past year and everything they did to kind of market it and get it ready. I would have liked a little bit more. At the beginning, you know, I think a lot of us were kind of like, yeah, let's get this over with, right? But as it was going on, I'm like, oh no, I don't want this to end. This is great.
Mm-hmm.
So I think as far as standings go, yeah, that's probably where everybody should have been. I wonder if it would have been different if there was a few more games.
And probably would have been. Like, I was surprised to at least see Finland not get a regulation win at all in the tournament. They did get one win. It was the overtime win over Sweden. But, yeah, they didn't pull anything else out of their hat with that tournament. It was quite surprising.
I will say this about the tournament that might be a negative in that, you know, these breaks that happen mid-season, I found in some cases it does hurt teams.
Oh, totally.
Because, you know, they go on a break, they go sit on a beach for a couple of weeks and then try to come back and play intense hockey. It's like they forgot their systems or they're just, you know, it's like you've got to get back into that groove again. It can be really challenging for a lot of teams to find that groove again. And I use Vancouver as that perfect example because they were on a winning streak when everything shut down for the tournament. And then when they came back, they went on a losing streak. So, you know, it's definitely up and down for a lot of teams, especially teams that aren't at the top.
I think that's a nice probably way to maybe move into how we expect our own teams to kind of perform, because, you know, you were just talking about Canucks aren't playing so well.
Yeah.
The Leafs were, sort of. Their record was good because they went on a 5-game winning streak after the tournament, but they really weren't playing well. And I think Paul and I, we talked about it a little bit. It's going to bite them, and it has. They're now on a 2-game losing streak. But even out of the 5 games that they won, there's probably only one game where they really deserve to win. They managed to, you know, get down, and their offense is so strong they can come back in a lot of games, or at least they have an opportunity to.
Yeah, yeah.
But realistically, they're not playing well. Like, I don't know, is it a coincidence because Tanev's gone? I mean, the goaltending has been great all year except for right now.
Mm-hmm.
I think the one thing, like, when you're looking at the wins that they had, at least post-tournament here, is that you can see the difference on this team this year than previous years, where if they get down, they're kind of out. They've been, at least I've noticed a few times this year, when they've gone down, they're there to fight and still come back. And, like, that Boston game, to be honest, like, again, as much as we love the Bruins, to see that comeback and to see the no giving up attitude for that win, that's exactly what I want to see from my team.
Yeah, you want to see your team do the right thing. And I mean, yeah. I know, you know, watching the Canucks play last season is a perfect example. Actually, the games that they lost, I felt like at least they gave an effort and they made it a game. Like, they're playing well defensively and whatnot. So that's what you want to see. But if your team is literally sitting back and letting the offense drive the play and you're not really doing anything to put a forecheck forward, that can be really frustrating for a fan. And you know, I can say I've seen that a lot this year with Vancouver. It's definitely frustrating when you consider the fact that they were a completely different team last year, you know, winning the Pacific and everything. But yeah, this tournament I felt like did hurt Vancouver. The break specifically, you know, going into that 2-week break, there were players like Connor Garland and I also think of Dakota Joshua, who was playing really well before the break, took the break and then came back, and it's like he forgot how to play again. He's doing better now, like as of today, which is like, what, 2 weeks now since they started playing again. But it took a while for him to get that momentum again, right? So it can be frustrating. And then, of course, you also consider the fact the trade deadline is tomorrow, and these teams are going to look different after the trade deadline, right? So, like, what kind of defense are these teams going to come with, or offense even in that case? There's, you know, a lot of teams are going to have a lot better forwards joining their teams, and they might have a lot worse forwards on their teams based on selling or buying, right? So it just depends on those kind of factors too.
How has Lankanen been playing? Because he really didn't have a good tournament at the Four Nations, right?
You know what? Actually, I agree. I felt like he was a bit soft in the tournament. He's been really well. He's been playing really well. I can't blame him for a lot of the losses that the Canucks had that he played in after the tournament, just for the fact that the defense hasn't been there. The forecheck hasn't been there. The game against Anaheim the other day was probably their best game all year, just based on hard on the puck constantly. They played 60 minutes of hockey for the first time all season. It was exciting to see. And I'm hoping this is, you know, a sign of things to come. And again, it's tough because trade deadline's tomorrow. We don't know what Vancouver's going to look like on Friday night, right? So, It's a challenge for sure. I'll tell you one thing too. You talk about, you know, teams that are going on like kind of losing streaks or not playing the same. Edmonton's a perfect example of that. They're on a, I think, 6-game losing streak. They just lost 6-2 to Anaheim the other day. Goaltending has been a big problem for them. And it's funny because, you know, I thought I saw an interview kind of reported on Twitter at some point where their GM had said they're not looking at goaltending in the trade market.
I find that hard to believe.
It's hard to believe, and B, it's like, what are you thinking? Of course you should be looking for goaltending. And I'm sure Oilers fans would say the same thing.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they're not going to be selling, you know, this trade deadline because they're a contender, if not the contender. When you consider now what, you know, Florida and Tampa have been doing in the trade market, but Edmonton's got to be gearing up for big things this offseason, so, or this playoffs, I should say.
Well, you have to look, I guess, what like a best and best tournament like this does for the players that were involved in the tournament compared to the players that weren't, right? Like, I'm noticeably seeing with some of the star players that were in that tournament, the fatigue that happens with having been in a tournament that was that intense. You have the rest of the team that's resting and so on, but, you know, I look at McDavid, he hasn't had that greatest stats since he's come back from the tournament. Matthews was pretty slow to start getting goals. He's been just recently in the last couple of games starting to get some goals, but it's, I believe that there was definitely, especially your star players being an embodiment of your team, you could see kind of the rust that was happening from, or not the rust, the fatigue, sorry, from having been involved in that tournament, and it kind of rubs off onto your team at the same time because you rely on those star players to kind of motivate you, carry the team. You know, if they score that goal, that kind of gets you all driven up and ready, you know, that's, you kind of need that. And if they're not bringing that energy, it affects the rest of the team, I find.
Yeah, it's got to, I mean, you know, players feed off each other, especially on a team like Edmonton, right, where it's like you have expectations.
It's the same in Toronto with Matthews. Yeah, I mean, he's on a 10-game point streak, but I really don't think he's been playing that well.
No, I don't think either.
Especially not away from the puck, right? And him being thrown into that captain role is really kind of, I wonder if it's been a bit of pressure this year because they haven't really shown consistently that he's been injured. Like, he was kind of nursing something towards the beginning, back at the beginning of the year, but really there hasn't been much of an issue since, at least not that we're hearing about or knowing about. So you wonder if there's something else because he just seems off. It seems like he's not locked in all the time, not making the right decisions, positionally not being where he normally is. The goal scoring's there. I mean, I think he's hit like 7 posts in the last 4 games. Like, you know, it's close, right? If the guy rips the puck, most times it's got a good chance to go in. That's just how he is. That's the name he has for himself. That's the player that he's become. But there's just something off about him, and I think what I need as a fan, and what we need as Leafs fans, if I can speak for everyone, is something more. It may not be that goal, but it's got to be something else. It's got to be, you know, finish that check, which he does a little bit. Not as much as I'd love. He's a big guy. Yeah. But, you know, being that person that's going to back check and be in the right spot. And normally he is back, But it's, I don't know, he just doesn't seem to be as locked in as he normally is.
And maybe it has to do with the players, you know, like I said, the players that they played with during the tournament and now the players they're back playing with their teams, right? Like Matthews, if you look at him during the tournament there, he was probably the USA's best two-way forward. He was there the entire time. You know, he wasn't rough and gruff like the Tkachuks were, but he was an influence in the games. Same with Mitch Marner in terms of, you know, he's known to be a defensive player, at least for the Leafs. He maybe wasn't as noticed during the tournament for some of his defensive play or even point making, but you know, I look at him right now in terms of the
what?
Sorry. Doing this.
Don't pay attention to me.
You're like looking at me.
Yeah, dude. I'm stretching my eye.
Sorry, okay. So you look at You look at Mitch Marner and you know, like I said, he didn't necessarily have the greatest like point scoring or point getting tournament in terms of being noticed, but he played in key moments, right? He scored the overtime goal in the Canada's first game. He set up McDavid for the tournament winning goal. I look at, you know, him coming now back into the season and he seems a little fatigued, but I think he's amped up at least his value that much more for his team.
That brings me to my point. I, you know, talking about him being fatigued. I've been telling myself this, especially with Vancouver, is like part of me thinks that a lot of these players are trying to somewhat take it easy to gear up for the playoffs. Like there's a specific point where they start going, okay, now we need to up the intensity. And that, you know, because you know how they get, if they play, say, two straight months of intense hockey, it can really drain you. And then you're not ready for the, say, the finals or something like that. Right. And a lot of that is valid when you consider what happened with Vancouver last year playing against Edmonton, because they had a really great series against Nashville. And then in that final game against Edmonton, they just didn't have it. They didn't have the energy.
Yeah. Well, to kind of quote our buddy Mikey, you know, it's, we kind of look at the need for, I guess, kind of rest before the playoffs. You know, it's kind of the idea when it's Mark Stone going on the LTIR, right?
So, yeah. the constant jokes of like, okay, so when are they going to announce Mark Stone on LTIR? It's so funny. And that, like I said, that was the joke I had we were talking about a player on LTIR. Oh, yeah, Matthew Tkachuk, when I said Matthew Tkachuk would be on LTIR as well.
Mark Stone did have a ruptured spleen. Give the guy a bit of a break.
It's just so
it's
funny.
It's coincidence. I mean,
was the year they won the cup.
No, I know.
And he came back.
And then last year they did it with Hurdle. One.
Yeah.
Right? He had a bummed knee when they traded for
That's
him.
That's right. Yeah. Quote, unquote.
So they'll be trading for Mika Rantanen next when he goes on LTIR, right?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. You know, it's funny because we look back at you know, the tournament itself and how it affected the players. You know, I think about the intensity that Team USA brought to the game. Austin Matthews was a perfect example of that. I mean, he was probably, you know, one of the best players on the team, consider like when it comes to the offense that he brings. What are your thoughts on, say, overall USA's defensive game, with, say, Austin Matthews? I mean, that goal that McDavid scored at the end, that was Austin Matthews, you know, guy he should have been.
Blunder,
he should have been,
yeah.
I mean, it's pretty hard to knock the defense of the Americans for the most part.
Yes.
And they were missing Quinn Hughes.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean,
and Charlie McAvoy in the final.
Oh,
game.
Yeah, that's right. After the first game against the Canadians,
and
McAvoy.
Matthew Tkachuk was injured throughout the game.
He literally played. Did he play
like 9 minutes? I think the entire game.
I don't even know if it was that long, Paul. But yeah, he didn't leave the bench. I thought that was pretty cool. Like, he wanted to be there, right? Yeah. So I mean, that you could see that they're passionate and whatnot, and it meant more to them too, right?
Yeah. The big argument. Sorry to interrupt, but the big argument with Matthew Tkachuk playing was that Kyle Connor couldn't play because of the position that Matthew Tkachuk was taking up. So it was really interesting to kind of see that decision and have him only play like you said, up to 9 minutes in the first period, basically. Never saw the ice again after that. So pretty crazy.
Yeah, we look at, we kind of talk about the rosters and you're talking about Kyle Connor not being able to play. I still look at a guy like Mark Scheifele, in my opinion, should have made the team over. Looking hindsight now, should have made it over a guy like Brandon Hagel or even
Well, Sorelli.
See, I was fine with Sorelli making the team. I thought Sorelli, because I knew that he was a good two-way center and he'd be good for the fourth line.
Mm-hmm. I think the reason why they decided on Hagel over Scheifele is speed more than anything.
Yeah, and that makes perfect sense. I look at a guy like Scheifele's size, he would have been perfect down the middle for the third, probably even the third line in my personal opinion. But I after the tournament's over now, I can't complain with the results. Like Team Canada played great. Sam Bennett had an important goal, and again, if you looked last year or the year before, you'd probably say, "Well, Sam Bennett making Team Canada." I don't know about that, you know. I would have picked Mark Scheifele, you know, like somebody ahead
of
him.
Or a John Tavares.
Yeah.
Somebody like that with a little more experience, right?
But we're post-tournament now. We've seen the results and like there's no complaints. I'm happy with exactly how every player that was there played. And obviously Thomas Harley getting that emergency call-in to come in for Tater. He was great with Doughty.
He played well. Yeah.
He was really good with Doughty.
So let me ask you guys this. I know you guys are Leaf fans, so you're going to have a biased opinion on this when it comes down to it, but do you think after this tournament and after all of his other success as head coach, John Cooper, is he the best head coach in the NHL?
Yes.
Yeah. It's hard to say no, right?
I'm not going to give an explanation just based upon what I've seen. Yes. Yeah.
I'm just saying, take your Leaf hat off for a second, which you are ironically wearing one. but take your Leaf hat off for a second and just think of it as a overall, you know, structure coach who knows how to utilize his players. And he's got some of the best players in the world being the coach of Team Canada, but he knows how to utilize his players. It just feels to me like there's no better coach to coach Team Canada.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say, like, nothing to do with being a Leafs fan. Like, if I were to say no, it has nothing to do with the fact that he's the coach of the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Right, right.
That would have nothing to do with my answer. If I were to say no, my answer would be because I think maybe another coach is a slightly better coach than he is. But, you know, because somebody like Rod Brind'Amour comes up for me.
Yes.
And I have really high praise for Rod Brind'Amour. And, you know, Carolina's statistics for the past 4 or 5 seasons would show that technically, he probably is the best coach on the ice. But then Paul Maurice in Florida, look what he's done with that team consecutive years. So, I mean, I'm not going to say no because John Cooper, with the success he's had, the cups.
And that's just it. That's literally all I'm basing it on.
Yeah.
And the game, just the way he utilizes the players.
I think the way he handles media.
Yeah.
We get some back footage behind the scenes and some mic'd up moments, like when he was talking to Binnington. I would not even gonna try to say what he said, but it's something along the lines of, you know, hey, big players and big moments, kid, way to go.
Yeah,
essentially, right? Because he knew that people were doubting Binnington, and he said, you know what? No, I'm sticking with my guy.
That's right.
And you know, there you go. Could you argue that him staying with Binnington is that just that head coaching prowess that he's had so much success?
Yeah, he knows how it works, right? And I just feel like it's hard for me to sit here and say, you know, I agree Brind'Amour is a great coach. I just don't, you know, based on the fact that John Cooper's got all the success that he has, including with you know, the players he's had over the years, Brind'Amour has had great players, but he hasn't had the same kind of results. So ultimately, you know, for me, it John Cooper is number one when I think about it. So no better coach to lead Team Canada. I was very proud to have Rick Tocchet, my, you know, the coach of the Canucks, as an assistant on the bench too. But ultimately, like, that's John Cooper's team, and he's making those final decisions, and it, you know, I'm hoping that Tocchet learned something from him, you know. So when it comes to the playoffs, maybe we'll see that. I don't know.
Well, it's kind of funny, like, things can change on a dime too when it comes to coaches, players, and anything like that. Again, you look at Mike Babcock for coaching Team Canada for the wins that they had during the Olympics, and now nobody would touch him with a 10-foot pole.
Yeah.
You know, it's amazing how fast those things can change.
It is. It really is. Yeah. Things change.
Nothing's guaranteed.
Nothing's guaranteed. We as Canadians are lucky to have the team that we had and the coaches that we had, and the tournament worked out great for us. I will say firsthand that I was not the most confident in Team Canada during this tournament. And I think that's what made it so exciting for them to come back and win it in the end. I feel like we really got our quote unquote money's worth, and it was exciting to watch the whole way through. Well, gentlemen, before we wrap the show up, I just thought it was it would be a good time to maybe talk about a couple of passings we had recently. A couple of actors, Michelle Trachtenberg, who you may remember from the movie Euro Trip. That's where I remember her from. And I know she was in a lot of other stuff, too.
Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Yeah, Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And of course, Gene Hackman recently passed away as well. Really sad to hear about that one specifically. It was sad to hear about both, but really sad to hear about that one specifically because from what I understand, it was Gene Hackman, his wife, and their dog passing away at the same time.
What's so strange is it seems suspicious.
Yeah.
They're saying there's reports that are coming out consistently as they do more autopsies or checks and more investigation. But it sounds like Gene Hackman was dead for like a week before anybody else was.
Crazy.
It's a very strange situation.
It is. You know,
he lived a long life, though.
He did. Yeah, he did. He really did. And he had a really great career as an actor as well.
Yeah, he did.
One of my dad's favorite actors, if not my dad's favorite actor. Gene Hackman and then Tommy Lee Jones are like his two number one actors.
Classic.
And so, you know, I think of Gene Hackman. When I think of Gene Hackman, I think of Lex Luthor.
That's exactly where my head was going.
I think of Superman and he was a great Superman, you know. I also loved him in there's a movie he did with Will Smith. What is it
Enemy
called?
Enemy of the State.
Enemy of the State. Yeah, that's right. It was a fun one. I really enjoyed that movie.
I watched that not long ago, I don't think. Yeah.
Yeah, and he's really good in it. But he's been in so many different movies that I just felt like, you know, he really portrayed the character well, and he also played a bad guy really good too. Like Lex Luthor is incredible.
Well, he was really good. Talk about like bad guys, right? He was really good in Runaway Jury with John Cusack.
That's right.
Playing kind of a slime ball kind of. Was he a lawyer in the movie?
No, they just called him a jury consultant.
That's right.
In that movie. Right. Yeah. Another one I watched recently. Yeah, that one's a classic, Gene Hackman. I would say my actually favorite from his is a movie from the 80s, and I think it was 1984 or 1983 called Uncommon Valor.
Yeah,
that's right.
You're
talking about that one.
Yeah.
Is that the one you keep telling me to watch?
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
It's a great war movie. Yeah, that's one that sticks out for me, and that's... You know, we're talking 35 or almost 40 years ago.
He was consistently acting for a really long time. I feel like he only retired from acting, say, 5 years ago.
No,
something like that.
It's funny you say that. His last film, I mean, maybe he did some TV, but his last film was 2004.
Wow.
Like, he did like a whole Sean Connery thing where he's just like, nah, I'm done.
Yeah, and you know, honestly, good on him for doing that. So he got to live 20 years just to enjoy life, right?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, he did live a long life. It's unfortunate the way, you know, the way it ended, but at least we can look back and kind of remember all the good stuff.
When you talk about long life, right? You look at somebody like Michelle Trachtenberg, she didn't even make it to 40.
No.
You know? It's so young to pass away. Like, obviously, there's people that are younger that passed away sooner than her, but... again, she might not have been known for the same acting chops, but again, tragic for someone like her to pass. I believe it was liver disease.
I was going to say liver disease. She was getting like a liver transplant or something.
Yeah. There was complications with surgery, I think.
Right.
Yeah, or complications after surgery.
So unfortunate.
Yeah. If you look at her photos from the last couple of years, she didn't look very healthy. So
when you have an unhealthy liver, like it literally does affect your face. You look white and, you know, pale, and yeah, it's unfortunate. You know, I don't have a lot of like memories of a lot of stuff she did, but I do remember Euro Trip. That was a fun movie. If you've never seen it before, it's hilarious. It's so funny. It's definitely not a kid's movie. There's, you know, nudity, swearing, and all that stuff. And of course, the theme of the movie, but it's really funny. Matt Damon has a really funny role in that movie too, but, yeah, you know, it's unfortunate to lose somebody so young who, you know, she did have some great roles too.
Yeah, she did. And ones that you remember. And like, again, a lot of people will remember her for Buffy. I won't lie that she was... I've had a lot of crushes in Hollywood in my life, but she on that particular show,
she was
a crush on there. Like, everyone's like, oh, Sarah Michelle Gellar is the pretty one. I'm like, no, I like Michelle Trachtenberg.
A little mysterious side.
Yeah.
Yeah,
she started young too, right? Like, she was just a little kid when she started acting. So
yeah,
she was doing like Disney stuff, I think, or Nickelodeon or something like that. I can't remember. Don't quote me on that, but yeah.
Might have been Nickelodeon. It's yeah, it's unfortunate she didn't have the opportunity to obviously expand probably her Hollywood resume and stuff like that at this point in life. She's probably, like I said, she's been fighting this disease for the last little while and it ultimately took her life. So, you know, there might have been more ahead for her, and it's, you know, God rest her soul in regards to no longer being with us now.
And Gene Hackman as well, and his wife and his dog. It's, you know, it's unfortunate. I know there are, you know, I feel like sometimes you'll hear of a passing in Hollywood, like an actor or somebody, and then you'll hear like a week later somebody else, and then a week later somebody else. It like happens in threes, it seems like. But yeah, it's just, you know, it's unfortunate that, you know, people have to kind of go that way. But, you know, it's nice to hear that at least Gene specifically had a nice long life. He got to really enjoy his career and enjoy retirement as well. Michelle, unfortunately, at such a young age, not even 40, what, she was like 35, 36, right?
Or 39,
yeah.
Still, not even 40, and, you know, unfortunately taken too soon. So in the end, I think we all consider it too soon, but, you know, our thoughts and prayers go to their families, and, you know, from all of us at the Puck and Pod, we hope their families are coping okay, and, you know, life does go on for some of us out there.
We're talking about actress passings, and obviously this is kind of more of a lower note, but considering, like, so we've lost two respected actors, is there anyone that either you, both of you guys, could think of that if they were gone tomorrow it would really affect you emotionally,
like actors? I was like, obviously my family.
Actors, yeah, Hollywood related.
I mean, when Robin Williams passed away, that literally brought tears to my eyes, because everything he did was incredible. They actually, I literally today was on Twitter while I was waiting to go to work, and there was a video on Twitter. It was a commercial with his full-grown daughter playing a Wii game with Robin Williams. It's like they digitally added him or something like that, but it kind of made you know, tear up, because you're just like, man, you don't realize you miss somebody until you kind of see them again after so long, and you just think, wow, it would have been really cool to have him back again.
I don't know if I can pinpoint an actor or actress that I find that way about. I could probably tell you a handful of musicians for me. I mean, music's such a big part of my life, that's too.
Right. Yeah, it doesn't necessarily have to be actors. It could be a musician, too.
Yeah, so. I mean, you know, any, like Elton John, who's been a big influence on me as an entertainer and the way I sing, things like that. You know, you get classic acts like Keith Richards or Mick Jagger from the Stones. Like, it would probably affect me. Yeah. Just like I've mentioned before, when I went and saw the James Taylor concert, I'm not even that big of a James Taylor fan. But watching him play in the stadium at 75 years old, you know, he comes out soft. And then when it's time to rock, he gets up, he throws his stool out of the way. And he's, you know, he's already 6'9" or something. He's a monstrous man. Yeah. And he makes that guitar look so small, but he just plays the hell out of it. And he sings and he's scatting and having a good time and jumping up and down with the drummer and cueing everybody and having a blast. I was in tears watching that performance just to be in the vicinity of such legendary status, right? Yeah. Somebody with a career as long as James Taylor and the things that he's overcome in his life. So I would say people like that would affect me more than say an actor. If I had to pick one, I mean, Denzel Washington, who's probably my favorite actor, I'd probably be pretty upset if he were to go. You know, a guy like Matt Damon, movies that you just have loved over the years.
Yeah.
But I don't think that I would say, oh, yeah, like I need to take a couple days off work if that guy went.
You know? Yeah. That's not the point I'm going.
No, I know, for sure.
I didn't feel that way when Robin Williams died, but I was very sad, for sure. I definitely was.
Yeah, if I look at, I guess, people that have, I guess, had some influence in my life, when Princess Diana actually passed away, that was actually quite an emotional thing for my entire family. My mom had grown up in England and talked about, you know, Princess Diana and stuff like that. So it was definitely affecting. Same with the Queen when she passed, actually. Not as important.
I was less emotional with the Queen, but I understood the seriousness of the matter to the people of England, right? I mean, she's our Queen too in Canada, but you know, it just felt like it was time, because she was, you know, almost 100 years old. She'd served the people for so long that it just, you know, for me, it didn't surprise me in any way. But it was sad, for sure.
Shocking for me was when Michael Jackson passed. Yeah. I was a huge Michael Jackson music fan when I was a kid. So when he passed, it was very surprising. Surprisingly, because love Marvel and love the movies as much as I do, when Chadwick Boseman went, that was...
Yeah.
Because it was so surprising, right?
Yeah, like nobody knew anything.
Nobody knew anything about it. If I was looking at least actors that I've... Right now, that I wouldn't necessarily get so emotional about it, but it would certainly affect me.
Yeah.
Anthony Hopkins, when he passes, he's had so many roles, and he's a really genuine human being when you see him in interviews.
Or like Morgan Freeman.
Yep.
You know? I know.
It's those legendary status guys.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they've paid their dues. They've been around. They've done everything. They're humanitarians. They're philanthropists. They're, you know, outspoken. They contribute to charities and are doing so much work with the entire world and have done for 60 years that, you know, even guys like Matt Damon. Yeah. You know what? I bet you in 25 years, we're going to be saying the same thing about somebody like that.
Absolutely.
You know, Leonardo DiCaprio, these guys are going to have their mark as much as they already do already. Mm-hmm. It's going to just be that much more too. So I think it's just that fact that everybody considers guys like that to be the best.
Yeah. Legendary.
Until they're gone. And then somebody else moves up into that category.
Yeah. Right? And surprises you. That's right. I'm just waiting for that replacement for Robin Williams. I mean, there's some funny guys out there, but like nobody does it like Robin Williams did it, you know?
I was thinking earlier, as you were kind of mentioned that you were going to ask about which actors or actresses may, you know, affect you. Mm-hmm. One of my first thoughts was Jim Carrey. And he's kind of like fallen right off the map, right? Like Jim Carrey was such a big part of my childhood.
Yeah.
He kind of has fallen right off the map, right?
What's funny about him is that, you know, he threatened to retire from acting. He didn't threaten. He said he was going to do it. But he's still kind of like, he just did the Sonic 3 movie, right? And he still does the characters like Jim Carrey's like supposed Jim Carrey, to do it, right? Yeah. Like he's still Mr. Rubberface. Like he still, you know, performs and he's still funny and all that stuff. But it's like he's not in everything anymore, so it's like you don't see him that often, and unless you watch the Sonic movies, which typically are kids movies and stuff, you know, you're not gonna notice him as much anymore. So I totally get where you're coming from when you say that. Well, gentlemen, I feel like this is probably a good place to end the pod today. We've said our, you know, goodbyes, so to speak, to those we've lost. But, you know, we said our goodbyes to the Four Nations tournament as well. That was an intense tournament. And I'm really glad in the end we got to watch something like that. That was so meaningful because it's preparing us for the Olympics, which is coming up real soon.
Yep, that's right.
So,
hard to believe, really.
Yeah, it is really hard to believe, but it's exciting at the same time. And, you know, we're preparing physically for an intense day tomorrow, being trade deadline day in the NHL. We're going to be live streaming for like 6 hours tomorrow. I'm looking forward to it. I'm really, really hoping the technology works and we don't have any issues. But of course, I'll knock on wood when I say that. But of course, you know, things do happen and we'll just work our way around it. And it will be our first kind of on camera, quote unquote podcast. It's a live stream, but you will be able to watch it, of course, on our YouTube channel after the fact as well. And hopefully you, the audience, like it. Please join us on the podcast and join us on future podcasts as well. We will be doing video podcasts real soon. So prepare yourselves for that. And of course, you can comment on any of our social medias. We're available on TikTok. We're on Instagram. We're on Facebook, at the Puck and Pod. Are we on Blue Sky? Do you know?
I don't know.
I'm not sure either. Maybe we'll have to get a Blue Sky account as well.
We'll work on it.
Get ourselves away from that Elon Musk. Anyway. but, you know, of course, we're on YouTube as well. And you can also reach us wherever you find your podcasts. We're available, you know, Amazon,
Spotify, iHeartRadio,
etc. So make sure you check us out there if you haven't already. Thank you so much for listening. Once again, for the Puck and Pod, my name is Joe.
My name is Brandon.
And I'm Paul.
We will see you guys in the next one.